Hello and welcome to M. Night Frights, the Talk Film Society podcast celebrating the genre films of Manoj Naliyattu Shyamalan, aka M. Night Shyamalan. I'm your host, Manish Mathur, staff writer at Talk Film Society. This episode, I'm talking about Shyamalan's 2004 romantic mystery horror film, The Village, starring Bryce Dallas Howard, Joaquin Phoenix, Adrian Brody, Sigourney Weaver, William Hurt, Brendan Gleeson, Cherry Jones, and Judy Greer. Joining me today is dating and relationship coach Versha Mathur, who's also my sister. Hey, Versha, how are you?
Hey, Manish. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Pretty excited to talk about this film. I just wanted to ask you, like, when was the first time you saw The Village? Did you see it in theaters back in 2004?
I didn't see it in theaters. It was a really busy time in life for me, so I actually did watch it when it came on DVD. And it was great because I watched it alone, which is the scariest way to watch scary movies, but it actually makes it a little more impactful, and I think you absorb more that way as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I've also seen this movie on DVD several times, mostly by myself, and yeah, I definitely agree that it's fun to watch by yourself. You can all, like, pick up on what you need to pick up on, and yeah, have a really nice, like, isolated experience. Before we get into the film, just want the listeners to know that this is an spoiler podcast. You know, we do talk about all the plot twists and turns in the story. So if you haven't seen The Village, feel free to hit pause, go watch the film. It's streaming on Netflix currently, and come back and come back and listen to the show. So I just want to get your general thoughts on the film. Like, do you like the film? Like, what do you think about it now?
Yeah, I absolutely love the movie. I think more after I watched it the second, third, fourth time. But, you know, M. Night movies for me are always things that I hate but also love because, right, you know, I'm confused and a little disappointed when I'm watching it for the first time. But when you reflect on it later, it's just so interesting and so smart and really quite brilliant as the direction and the stories always go.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, especially with The Village. I think it's the kind of film that gets better on rewatch, and you really understand a lot of what he's going for with the film. And, you know, this movie is very famous, or rather infamous, for its twist ending, which we'll get to later, and that's proved to be kind of a divisive factor about this film. And this movie itself is very people are really divided on it. I know there are a lot of people who really love it, like you and I do, and there are people who don't like it at all, like some of our other family members. So, yeah, it's a really, really interesting film. And, you know, Versha, you are a dating and relationship coach. You know, you come to this movie with that background. I'd love to hear more about your thoughts from that perspective.
Yeah, it was brought to my attention even before I was in this profession. I realized that this film is actually a love story more than a horror film. And when you watch it from that perspective, the depth of the characters and the depth of the story, I think, are far more interesting. The concept that there's this tug of war between fear and love, it's really powerful. And I think it says a lot about what relationships can become. And, I mean, the love story between Bryce Dallas and Joaquin Phoenix, I mean, it's brilliant. It's the kind of simple connection that so many people strive for.
They really do seem to have an instant connection between them. And the film presents two other love interests for them that, you know, they reject those other two in favor of each other. And not in a kind of mean or callous way, but just that connection isn't there, and that they can really find themselves, you know, with the other. You know, Bryce Dallas Howard, her character Ivy, is blind, and she senses people's colors, which is another M. Night running theme, you know, the use of color. And, you know, she feels a very strong connection, like we said, to Joaquin Phoenix. His name in the film is Lucius, and she just doesn't feel that with anyone else. And he has a person pursuing him, which is Judy Greer's character, Kitty, and he just doesn't feel the same way about her, and it's because he has this more powerful connection with Ivy. And I think what I find most interesting about this love story is that at the beginning it starts as a very traditional love story of, you know, he's a very strong man, he's, you know, protector, he's being groomed to become a leader of the village by his mother and the other village elders, but then, you know, he suffers an or he becomes a victim to a crime, which we'll get to a little later. And turns out that Ivy is the one that has to make the action to protect him, and she has to be the one that saves him, which is a really nice reversal to the usual love stories that we see in film. And I think M. Night is really clever in that he sets up the film in such a conventional way, and that it takes a twist and you are really taken by surprise in the way that he presents the love story.
Yeah, there's so many things I want to say about that. First of all, is that a tactic of his, do you think, that he's putting Ivy in the more scary position of having to go into the woods? I mean, do you think people are reacting more intensely because a woman is doing it versus a man?
I think that's definitely a possibility. We have the trope in horror films, the final girl, which is usually a woman who's virtuous and plain and intelligent. And she's the one that survives, you know, a serial killer. For example, like Laurie Strode in Halloween, Nancy in the Elm Street films. And I think Shyamalan is trading in that same cliche, or that same trope. But I think that with this film being more focused on its romantic undertones and also becoming more of a fairy tale that's more, you know, ghoulish, I guess, than a normal, you know, Cinderella story or Sleeping Beauty story. I think he's kind of having the best of both worlds. It's a very common horror movie thing, but it's also a reversal of, like, the Sleeping Beauty narrative that we've seen.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about the colors, I mean, I think it's very interesting that he chooses red to be the color that everyone's scared of, and then essentially the color of what we all know to be love. And then, of course, I was kind of thrown off when, you know, people didn't even know that, you know, Joaquin Phoenix would bleed the color of danger. Right. I mean, does no one have a skin knee during all those years that they were in the village? But I thought that was a really interesting play, you know, especially because this is about love, that, you know, blood and passion and all of those things were so repressed in this village. And then as far as the auras go, I mean, Ivy was seeing an aura. She says she sees it also in her father. You know, it stops when he's injured. I think that says a lot about what society assumes women are going to fall for. Like, the aura of this man that she loves is also showing color like her father's does. And people always say, like, women fall for people who look like their father. I don't, or seem like their father. And I think, obviously, in a more modern society, that's not true, but perhaps in the village concept, somebody who's near and dear to her would be what the kind of qualities that she looks for in a man.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And, you know, the color red is used, as we've seen in the past three films, has been very important. Of course, The Sixth Sense, you know, we see the color red is the indicator that there are ghosts around, or that there's been death and pain. And but, you know, I like your connection to the color red for being, like, passion and romance. I mean, that's a really great point because, you know, red does have a lot of different connotations to it, both in film and in kind of real life. You know, the connection of blood is interesting. And, you know, I actually wanted to circle back to your point about how no one has had a skin knee. Like, they didn't know about the blood that blood is red. What I find most interesting about the village every time I've rewatched it is that the rules of this village don't really hold up to scrutiny.
Yeah.
And that there are a lot of little plot holes that kind of show up every time. For example, yeah, like, has no one had an injury? And, like, how is this society even going to sustain itself after the movie ends?
Yeah, like, once she goes back with the antibiotics, the village still is sustained. And I think he gets away with saying that the walkers had a no-fly zone through the military applied. I mean, I feel like that's a little bit of a cop-out, but it's an easy, like, okay, that's how they're getting away with it. We don't know necessarily how. I mean, you can tell by the way that they're dressed in the photograph in the box that it's probably the 80s, maybe, that this takes place in. So maybe at that time, a family like the Walkers could have that kind of clout.
I definitely think that there are things that M. Night leaves for us to chew on and think about. I mean, I've said this before, and I'll probably say it every episode. I don't think he is an unintelligent writer, and that he hasn't thought of whatever plot holes that people are going to be thinking about and wondering about after the movie. I think he bakes those into the film because he wants to leave us. He wants us to leave the theater thinking about things, and you sort of realize that, you know, I think William Hurt's character is a historian, but everyone else is just members of the support group that they've kind of bonded together and made this, you know, new society going back to the old times. And part of the plot hole is that they don't know what they're doing either. Like, they, this plan that they have is messed up from the beginning. And I think it must have been at least, they've been in this village for at least 20 something years. And they have adult kids who don't remember, you know, the life before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think, you know, if the film itself takes place in the 80s or they started this thing in the 80s, I think definitely it's been a while. And there's definitely some issues of, yeah, how can they afford this? Like, how, like, what's the, like, what kind of clout do they have, like you said earlier? And I think all that is very interesting to think about. And I think M. Night wants us to think about this stuff because, you know, he's a very Hitchcockian director. He cares more about the atmosphere and the feelings and the ideas versus, you know, the intricacies of the plot to make sure it all makes sense and checks out.
But I think he gets away with having, and I'm a huge fan of his, so I hope he's listening and I hope that he knows that we love his ideas. But I think it's a cop-out when he uses the final twist to get away with leaving holes. You know what I mean? Like, the holes are there. It's like, oh, whatever, because people are going to be so much in awe of the twist at the end. I mean, I really was. For all of his movies, I've been like that.
Right. And this is actually an interesting segue that you brought up, because M. Night at this time is really riding high. I mean, The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable and Signs were all massively successful at the box office. Unbreakable a little less so, but definitely Signs and The Sixth Sense were box office hits, and he was definitely very famous for being, you know, the twist guy. You know, he was always trying to top himself, and I think with The Village he came up with this, like, ultimate twist. And I don't know for sure, but I think he was trying really hard to dupe his audience. And and I think because he was just giving the audience what he thought they wanted and what people were telling him they wanted. You know, no one wanted anything different than, like, a horror movie with a big twist ending like The Sixth Sense was. So I think maybe with The Village, he was trying to give us a really, you know, shocking twist. And, you know, he delivered.
Yeah.
But absolutely. The film actually has two twists. One, which is a red herring, and that's the twist that the monsters aren't real.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first, you know, hour or so of the film, M. Night is teasing us about the supernatural monsters that are in the woods. And later, as Ivy is going through the woods, there's a really nice flashback sequence that's kind of edited through her journey. And it shows that her father is telling her that the elders are pretending that there are monsters in the woods and that they take turns, you know, doing these little scare sessions so that the people in the village, the citizens, their children, will stay out of the woods and not accidentally run into, you know, the modern life that's outside. And I think M. Night, in a really clever way, sets that up as, like, that's the twist ending. And then he delivers the even more shocking one after, once Ivy reaches, you know, the paved road and meets the security guard. What do you make of that red herring?
I mean, I like both. I think it's harder to watch the second time around, the back and forth cutting clips.
Right.
But, you know, it was part of the plan. You kind of need that. It makes sense. I think the costume that they use is, like, very elaborate and a little unrealistic, that this group would create this elaborate costume and get away with having one person missing all this time. I mean, again, it goes back to the holes, but it's just, it's a really, really creative and deep idea that he's executed really well. I was actually pretty surprised that the movie didn't do as well as it should have, because I thought it was brilliant in the ways that he's thinking about filling in the bigger holes that, you know, it could be worse is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a really interesting little twist for him to do, you know, kind of, shake the audience up. And, you know, actually, now that we're at that point, I wanted to talk about Ivy's journey in the woods itself.
Mm-hmm.
I found nods to Little Red Riding Hood, you know, I mean, she's wearing yellow, which is another kind of twist to the, you know, general fairy tale narrative. And so, like, what do you make of that in terms of her character arc?
As far as Ivy wearing the yellow, going into the woods, you know, it's all about, I think, the overcoming fear for the sake of love. And that powerful, powerful connection that she has with Joaquin Phoenix, the character, I mean, it's getting a blind woman to go into the woods, which are even more blind to her because she's never been that far in, and then go and speak to somebody she's never met before when she's lived in a small community all her life. I mean, this is scary stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and it's really, really hard to believe. But when you think of it from the context of love conquers all, I mean, I'm a sucker for that stuff just because of the work that I do. But at the same time, you can feel it. Like, who in your life would you do that for? There are people, siblings, parents, spouses. I mean, this is something you would do for them. Those two characters and this setting makes you believe it. And the way that it's presented, you feel it.
For sure. I definitely find that, you know, this journey into the woods for Ivy represents something she just has to do. And she is powered by love in her relationship with Lucius, and she has to do it. And I don't think that anyone else in the village could have done this for him. And I definitely don't think that I don't think anyone else but him would have done it for her had he needed to. So I think it's a really interesting love story. And I really like this idea of the village as a love story that's pretending to be a horror movie, because I think that's really where, you know, M. Night's strengths lie, in his very unapologetic sentimentality. I mean, all of his films are very sentimental. They always trade on strong relationships between people. I mean, in this film, we see the strong relationship between Bryce Dallas Howard's character Ivy and Judy Greer, who plays her sister Kitty. Mm-hmm. And kind of circling back to the beginning a little, there's one of my favorite moments in the film, and I think one of M. Night's funniest, you know, sequences is Kitty declaring her love for Lucius, and she gives this very over-the-top speech. He has a complete blank expression, and M. Night does a really sharp jump cut to Kitty crying into her sister's arms, and it's a play for laughs, very silly, but yeah. It's a nice little moment to see the two of them bonding as sisters, and later, you know, Ivy asks her permission to marry Lucius, and Kitty gives it very graciously.
Yeah, I mean, that's just another example of the relationships. I loved that dynamic between the two sisters and how they're just so matter-of-fact with one another, and yet there's so much depth in their relationship. I also kind of love-hate the father, her father. I mean, he's willing, and at the time when you first watch it, you don't know that what he's sending her into. You know, when you hear the village elders talking about sending Ivy and, you know, agreeing to it and blah, 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 we don't know what she's going into is safe, you know? Right. So I was kind of like, what's going on here? Are they willing to protect their village so much so that they would send a blind, heartbroken, you know, woman into this, you know, vast woods of danger? And so that kind of was an interesting dynamic. Later on, I guess it makes sense that it protected both the village and allowed for this solution of healing, you know, their loved ones. But, you know, my favorite scene of the whole movie is when Bryce Dallas and Joaquin Phoenix are sitting on the porch in front of her house, kind of deciding whether or not they're going to be together. And it's like this banter back and forth. And it's pretty fun. And it's very direct. It's very succinct. It's like, are we going to do this? And it's essentially saying like, hey, are you going to go after what you want? Because if you're not going to find anyone out there who's going to tell you that, you know, they love you, then, you know, you need to own up to your own feelings and go and get it. And that's essentially what Ivy does. And as a result, she's able to, like, lock it down and make it clear to Joaquin Phoenix.
You know, we do have to talk about, I think, one of the weakest parts of the film for me. And it's the one that I find very hard to forgive, especially, you know, 14 years later when the political climate is very different. But that's the character played by Adrian Brody. Mm-hmm. It's a very, his character's name is Noah. He's coded as mentally challenged in some way. It's not quite clear what that means, or, you know, if he's been diagnosed, or it's a very awkward performance. And it's, to me, the character is nothing more than a plot device. You know, he's in his own childish or whatever kind of manner they're, you know, M. Night is writing him in, stabs Lucius, and that sets off the second half of the film. And it is a very shocking scene, and it's, you know, beautifully shot, objectively as a piece of cinema. But I find it very uncomfortable to watch. It's really...
You mean when she's fighting him in the woods or when he's stabbing her? When he's stabbing Lucius.
I mean, either one. I find both kind of hard to watch in this time because it just feels so ill-defined. It seems very clunky. And I think, you know, M. Night has been accused in the past treating, you know, mental illness or the mentally challenged as a plot device. And
it's
a little awkward to watch that. You know, I'm sure it was awkward back then in 2004, but especially now... You know, in 2018 eyes, and we're a little bit more socially conscious of portrayals of, you know, people with disability, either mentally or physical. Especially awkward to see Ivy, who, I mean, her blindness is almost a power in itself because she has her sense of aura, which is a little bit more sensitively handled. But yeah, I don't know. The Noah character I find very hard to stomach these days.
Yeah, and it's, you know, again, I think of it as a cop-out because, you know, using someone who's emotionally or mentally challenged is still scary to people.
Right.
And using that as a way to confuse people, maybe make a few, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, kind of make a few, you know, what is it when you kind of like make excuses for someone and say, oh, it's okay because he's like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
That's not okay nowadays. I think it's still like a scare tactic. That's an easy move, like you're saying.
And I think it would have been interesting to show that as much as they're trying to keep, you know, bad things from happening in their village by keeping the outside world out, they could naturally just not be able to keep crime outside. You know, if it was just another romantic rival and there was no awkward, you know, mentally challenged character, it was just another guy who, you know, was just jealous, like in jealous rage. And just, I think that would have been more interesting to see, like, even if they try to keep, you know, crime and pain and hurt outside of the village, they can't keep it out because it's just natural human behavior.
Yeah.
Instead, I think M. Night does do a cop-out, as you say, and it's just not very comfortable to watch. And I don't think Adrian Brody, he's fresh off his Oscar win for The Pianist. I don't think he gives a very good performance.
Oh, I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. Guess we'll have to disagree there.
Yeah.
I think he's, in my opinion, I think he and he's kind of outclassed by Bryce Dallas Howard and Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. That is very true. But what I do like is the contrast between Noah and, oh gosh, Ivy's sister.
Kitty.
Yeah.
In
fact, actually, it's not a contrast. They both are in love with Ivy and Lucius almost in the same way. Mm-hmm. Almost in a, we don't have a connection yet, but we're kind of infatuated with you.
Right.
And the fact that Ivy doesn't even pick up on it a little bit is kind of bothersome to me because I feel like she's intuitive enough to maybe have read the fact that Noah would be hurt by this information. But it doesn't seem very clear that she's worried about it.
Right.
Same thing with Lucius. Like, he doesn't seem to really react in a caring way towards Kitty. But that love between Kitty and Lucius and Noah and Ivy, like, that is the same. And that's kind of an interesting parallel to have that two extremes. And then in the middle, you have, like, the real deal, Ivy and Lucius.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that. So
I'm a sucker for relationships.
Yeah.
I love those dynamics. It's interesting.
Yeah. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the village, you know, in terms of its box office and kind of cultural impact. The film opened at number one, $50 million. This is the weekend of July 30th, 2004. So it did open pretty well. You know, the film itself cost about $60 million to make. So it made almost its budget back opening weekend. But unfortunately, I don't think it had a very strong hold throughout its run. And I think part of that has to do with people really disappointed or thrown off by its twist ending. The village is very divisive among viewers, as we said earlier, but I think it does take a few viewings to really get involved in the story and really appreciate what it's going for. It had a great opening weekend, but it really dropped heavily throughout the next couple weekends. Like, for example, its next weekend, it dropped 67%, which is pretty bad.
Wow.
So it made about $115 million in the U.S., but I think domestically it made about $142 million. So its total is about $255 million or so. Which is pretty good. I mean, that's about four times his budget. So it didn't make money back. I mean, M. Night's films are usually under $100 million. So he definitely hits that. And his films always turn a profit. I think a lot of that was people have this perception of M. Night as being very full of himself. He was had kind of inflated ego after his success, and I think people thought this film was just him extending himself too much. And I think in some ways it is, in some ways it's not. I mean, it's a pretty interesting movie, in my opinion, and it deserves, I think, to be reappraised. This was the actual film debut of Bryce Dallas Howard. M. Night Shyamalan had seen her in a production of As You Like It, and he was so taken by her that he cast her in the film. I'm not quite sure if he wrote the film with her in mind. I don't think so. I think he cast her in it, but this film was really a launching pad for her and shot her to at least to somewhat of a stardom. And she has been working steadily since. I think it really wasn't until 2012, The Help, when she really her career really took off. And then, of course, Jurassic World in 2015 is her biggest hit. And now she's, I think she's a great actress. I thought she was excellent in this film.
Yes, definitely.
Joaquin Phoenix, returning from Signs, M. Night's last film. Also a great performance. I thought he was really great. And nice to see, you know, actors like Sigourney Weaver and Cherry Jones, Brendan Gleeson, William Hurt. Celia Weston has a few scenes. I think these are all really great actors.
I mean,
and it's
classics, like underrated classics for sure.
So, and also this film was shot by Roger Deakins, one of, I think, the best cinematographers working today. I think this is his only film with M. Night Shyamalan. Usually M. Night works with Tak Fujimoto. So it's a nice change of pace for him to work with Roger Deakins. I think this is one of M. Night's best looking films, the vistas of the forest in the climax and the kind of close quarters in the village itself are really well captured. And of course, the colors red and yellow are very, very bright and well done. And I wanted to know your thoughts on the look of the film.
I do love the cinematography because the colors are so bold, which is really hard to do, like red and yellow. Hard to do when you're in nature. Like, most of the movie is kind of outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a really good job making everything seem kind of plain. Like, almost like you see when you watch movies about, like, maybe an Amish culture or, the Pilgrims. You know, I mean, it's really, like, takes you back to this very plain world. And the bright yellow and the bright red being the colors, like, the polar opposite colors. I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
It's good.
And also, one thing that I think everyone can agree on with this film is that James Newton Howard's score is very compelling and at times very, very scary, but it can also have a lush, romantic feel. James Newton Howard, this is 4 for 4 with M. Night, and I think he's done some really great work with the director. And I think this film especially has a very, very interesting, unique score and really fits the mood of the film, which is scary, but also romantic and also a little pastoral.
Yeah. When you watch the movie again, one of the best quotes from the movie, Ivy's father says this. He says, "Led by love, the world moves for love, kneels before it in awe." And it's right before they send her off and everybody's doubting her and worried about her. And that is essentially the core of the film. And I think when you think of it as their world was the village and it shifted and changed for love. And I think they all regret not doing more for their loved ones, whether it was this, you know, mentally challenged son, whether it was the kid who dies right at the beginning that they're mourning. I mean,
right.
So many things happened because they didn't do things for their loved ones. And now they're finally changing. It's awesome.
And I think that's a great place to end, unless you have any other final thoughts on the film.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you. Varsha, where can people find you online?
My company is called Knowing Lux, KnowingLuxe.com. And Knowing Lux is a dating and relationship coaching program for women. You can go on my website and schedule a call right there.
Great. And are you on social media, Twitter, Instagram?
I am. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Knowing Lux. And I look forward to talking to people. I do offer a free consultation that you can schedule at knowinglux.com.
Great, thank you. Yes, and you can find me on Twitter at themanish89. That's T-H-E-M-A-N-I-S-H 89. I'm also at topfilmsociety.com, where you can catch my writing about Alfred Hitchcock and other great things there. So look for me there. Next week, we're talking about another very divisive film by M. Night Shyamalan, Lady in the Water. So look out for that. And thanks for listening. Bye.